petrified with boats. That essay, it seems, quite a dedication led by the Bishop General and Mr. Patrick Hoffman, accompanied by the BBC Congress Committee, who has done the service plan, wanted to see what people are, and because the time is a dead name here, and I think the voters are not Dr. Jairo Aro, BBC Quality and Integration. Dr. Shah Kassim, BBC Economic Integration. Dr. Population and Social representing BBC's Institute of Support and Integration. And
Honorable Chair of TCOP, honorable members, it's always a pleasure to be present here to account on the things that we do. I was telling the chair this morning that I thought we were going to meet where we met last week with the minister, and I put all my Muji and everything there. To allow for that, but now starting the discussion again, that's where I caught my vision last night and this morning. So now it's all changed. We got to go back to you. We also have another delegation that comes. The last time. We are used for employing people who are less than 14 years in the census. If you will recall, he talked about this 100,000 here is this number X employee who is actually under age according to the records. Are you observing the labor laws? He didn't have an answer for that. Now we have decided to employ people who are above age of the generation. So they will be training as PSU women. So we need to do them as they come. They are part of the presentation. It's Professor Kambule and I thought that we may start off by the minister's speech, but that is the president's State of the Nation address of the 9th February. That goes any other speeches, the question of that is to put the question to ourselves. The question is, what progress have we made in the quest to achieve the objectives to which we honestly told the nation we are committed? Every regard of which our people gave us overwhelming authority to govern our country from 2004 until the next election in 2009. This question is answered by the leader. finance in his budget speech talks about human life having equal worth. And the fundamental question that we have to ask is, how do we measure progressively these achievements of human life? Terms of the measurement and the studies. So I would like to put this as the background to the presentation that you will put before yourself today. Measurement as to how much the state has progressed or not progressed. It's about the central question of human life attaining equal wealth. So, to the portfolio of Kumbesi today, we are putting across a strategic view, overview, the key strategic priorities, the key context to which we will master these priorities, and we'll postulate some questions about the future and give you a glimpse of what we think the future might look like, although statisticians have a mirror view of what life is about rather than projects. They look into the mirror and see what has happened in the past and they laugh at them. We thought that the key slogan that we can put on this is Set the on the Moon. GDFBIG know how to separate T-Corp from Scope, because each time we came here, the issues that came from Scope bled into T-Corp and from T-Corp into Scope. The last 3 years, I don't think we have had that kind of experience. Now that's why it is absolutely, and that's why Center Change is on the Moon. And we thought that we have moved out of that now, the future is here. So, we are emphasizing across there for the 2007-08 problem in line with our strategy, which is strategy, the 5-year strategy ending in 2009. And there are the laws that govern us, govern the minister, govern the council, govern the statistician general. And in terms of Section 5.1 of Statistics Act, the minister, on the recommendation of the statistician general and on the advice of Statistics Council, should prioritize the work of Statistics South Africa, with the purpose of official and statistics, and based on statistical thinking. When we look at our blue book, we also elaborate on the fundamental principles of official statistics, and there are 10 of them. And I think everybody will have the time, this time meeting, and you will be impressed with what those fundamental principles are. And according to Section 7 of the Act, the Statistician General must, after receiving advice from the Council, make recommendations to the Minister on the policies and priorities of the state. And the Statistician General exercises final responsibility regarding the implementation of the work program. And the power program is this one, which is presented to the Minister, Council has advice on, and we are presenting this work program to yourself. Further strategic overviews, 5 things that determine our direction, accurate, relevant, and reliable statistics are central. The challenge that the minister put to us in 2003 at the SAFA, South African Statistics Association, there were 4. The first was trust in official statistics. 2 was there are too few people, too few South Africans that engage in mathematical subjects and in statistics. In fact, he said, if you were to ask a classroom of children what they wish to be, it doesn't think that any one of the children will say statistics. If you might have mentioned statistics, you will say, what better is that? So now we need to make sure that mathematical subjects and statistics are key, and that's why we have the Octavian employees in our midst as Carmen Renner. But Javier is the teach around 10 young children be enthused into learning studies. The third challenge was that who determines, or rather, we paint ourselves relative to our capability. And the fourth was who determines what has been data. These 4 challenges, I think, in the course of our presentation, we've tried to outline how we have addressed it and how we continue to address them. In particular, who actually determines what you have transparency of NACOS is very critical to our work, and this consistent with the fundamental principle. And because this thing that we do resides in an intellectual environment of mathematics and statistics and science, we have to have highly skilled professionals that do this. When I went to the day, rather in the 90s, there was only one doctor in the organization, and that was Dr. Bichot. When we went to the day, there was only one doctor, it was Dr. Oppen. And in fact, then he got a few other skilled professionals, and we had about three or four. Now when I threw a stone in the air, the likelihood of that falling on a doctor is so high. So we have really invested in getting these people that have acquitted themselves to steal myself. Dr. Kassim, Dr. Arro, Dr. Nikali, there are many other master students. This is the nature of the trade, and that's how we are couching the improving the skills. Of course, the important thing is that do the statistics come and get received by a human society? Because statistics is like a drum. If nobody plays it, it just sits there. You need to play it. And the players of this are the audience that receives the statistics. Both the policy makers are the players of the drum. We'll talk about the drum as we go ahead, because it's a very fundamental thing in our drive towards a human society. Our mission is stated to be the preferred supply of quality statistics, and our mission is to provide relevant information relevant and accurate points of fact to inform on the economy and society. And we do so guided by the fundamental principles of statistics. There are 10 of them, as I said, and they are here in the document. The strategic teams, repeating myself, providing relevant information, quality of products and services, promoting statistical coordination and partnerships, and that's a very important and critical thing. Talk to the national statistics system and the role of the statistician general, who is the statistician general and accounting officer, head of statistics officer. Those two are two important things that the Act describes, the head of the organization, the statistician general of South Africa and the head of statistics. And that, in that regard, developing and promoting practical coordination and partnership becomes critical. In doing so, it can be done in the vacuum to help the building of human capacity so that the people who receive the statistics are adequately equipped to digest and deal with it. And we have to enhance effective governance and accountability. As the rest of the delegation arrives and sees, I'll take a minute to introduce them. This time. Iran. Iran Kalan. Professor Dambule. Enhancing effective governance and accountability, I think it's what we have always been put on our toes for. And I think the interactions between yourself and ourselves still leaves like a really good memory. That's a video teachings of our good interactions on this issue of enhanced effective governance and accountability. What are the key priorities? The key priorities are really major economic changes in the economy, whether it is growing or it is a negative component. Measuring changes in prices, particularly the consumer price index and producer price index. Measuring employment and job creation, either creation or losses or whatever, but trends in the labor market. Measuring life circumstances. It is answered to the question that the president asked himself and said, getting a piece of this thing or having been given the mandate, is the state doing what it promised, and is it doing what it promised and what we get too powerful, and that's the role of statistics. And of course, the population as a beneficiary and the nature of this kind of thing, he measured the demographic profile and the population there. And then the population of the beneficiary, we need one to know about. So what are the key priorities for which we say watch the state? Over the last 3 years, we have said we are planning, we are working towards. This year, what we are going to see is community service, income and expenditure service, quarterly labor cost service, we will parallel poverty service, we will reweight the CPI production producer index, we will deal with the data management and education device project, and we will talk to you about international, our role in the international community. The community service. Better understanding of our community. That's what this tells us. That tells us about our municipality. And therefore, key to this will be providing key information, legal information of the municipality level. The background is that this was planned in 2005, and in 2007 we went out into the field, reaching out to 284,000 households. It was an exciting moment. It was like a consummation of marriage. Now, we are currently processing and analyzing the community service data, still part of parcel of the table of all the great things, the nice things that have been done about consummation of marriage. And we believe that the community service deals with the issue of empty Canamea. He said, are you going to run the census of 2001? If in 1996 you died your brain, in 2001 you fell into that brain. In 2006 you will bury your family in that brain if you run the census of 2001. Now, we have avoided the failure. And we have planned to run the census in 2011. And we have used 2006 community service to help us get out of that place so that we don't get lost. Always the risk father. So we are using this 2006 2000 community service to help us plan for community development. I said that we were consummating the marriage in 2005, we went out in the field in 2007, now the baby will be born in the first quarter. This is the result of the community service. That's the best of the day. That's where we will say, here is the product of our union. So the result will be released in the first quarter of 2007 of this community service, and it's a letter. What about income and expenditure plans? Here we are saying there is a new basket for the CPI in the region. The aim of this community income and expenditure study is to provide information on the income and spending budget in the basket and to update the basket of goods and services that go and contribute into the consumer price index. You know when Governor Mboweni received the CPI, how he behaved. He behaved in a particular way. He increases the reporting. And all of us, we have voted for and all other things to know. But in fact, if I change in another way, he reduces it. Central to this decision is the income and expenditure target, which gives us the CPI, which gives us the market of goods and services and the relative weight of those goods and services that South Africans buy. We started in 2005 to start collecting this over a period of 12 months and we visited 4,000 households. And these households were visited each four times during that period. We used the diary method. It's an innovative method and deals with methods of memory lapses and so on. We are currently processing and analyzing the IES and we will engage with these results initially in June. The results of this will be in November 2007. That's when we'll have the data.
It's like a big year. So very, very productive. Queens, serial queens. Now, the important thing about this is that we'll come with the IES results and engage Parliament. Central to this is what is the participation of society. This is challenge four that the minister posed to us. Who determines what he has measured? This engagement points to that important issue of who determines what he has measured. But that determination is in the utilization of the data itself. The third baby is capturing the pulse of the labor market. It's nicer for the statistician general. Here, we want to comprehensively measure the dynamics of the labor market. And the labor force survey is the primary informer, the primary instrument through which we inform on employment. See, over the last 3 years, of the 5 years, from about 2000, one of the key things that we have been measuring has been employment and unemployment. 2000, 2001, the number of jobs that were created were relatively flat. I would say 80,000, thereabouts then, a year. 2006, 2007, we have seen jobs being created moving from 80,000 to 500,000. I'm sure if we are talking political terms, we will qualify that and say there was a surge. That statisticians say there was 80,000 and now there is 500,000. They don't talk in terms of sizes and the like. But the key point here is this. And I think a policy missed the point. And the policy debate didn't focus to what one would have thought they should have focused. In 2005-2006, 80,000 of the jobs were in manufacturing. So in 1 year, the number of jobs that were created in manufacturing were equal to the number of jobs that were created, total number of jobs created between 2001-2002. The critical question, I'm sure that policy would have pointed out to us, what is happening? Why 80,000? In the 500,000. What is happening? And policy should have then delved into that and understood that environment. It's very, very important to make this point because as we release the statistics, we have to understand not the one number 500,000, but the patterns and shapes that these things are taking so that we can be able to grasp the opportunities as they arise and behave more strategically and in a pointed direction. The debates, unfortunately, or the debates themselves, no, let me not say unfortunately because statisticians don't have take back. The debates were about these jobs, menial jobs, you know, they are not jobs at all and so on. And that is what carried the day in policy discourse. Instead of saying 80,000 in manufacturing is equal to the number of jobs that were created in the first 3 years of the first half of this decade. And in the second half of the first half of the decade, there were more jobs in manufacturing in the 500,000 number. So this instrument is very, very important and needs to be watched very carefully. In some economies, it moves markets more rapidly than the CPI. Here the improvements are in reviewed concepts and definitions of key indicators. We'll increase the frequency, the timeliness. We'll redesign the questionnaire and processes. So shortly we'll be getting this result of the pulse of the labor market. The new Voluntary Labour Force Survey will be launched in January 2008, and the first result of all these processes will come out in August 2008. This issue of poverty has been very much on our horizon. The only thing that I know is that poverty is a very expensive industry. It's a very expensive endeavor. Poverty is expensive. A person born poor is likely to die young. So you go through the same kind of investment processes in the creation of a child. But the one who is poor will die young. The one who is born relatively well off will die much earlier. So effort relative to reward between the poor and the rich, poverty becomes expensive. You don't get as many rewards as you would get for the rich person. You see, to get energy, the poor person works 8 hours to cut firewood. So the poor person spends most of their life doing things that do not reward. It's no time for thinking when you are poor. It's a very expensive endeavor. Extremely expensive. We just concluded work, and in my column yesterday I referred to this work, the Thursday column. And those who don't read it, please read it. It's a very important column. We are now on 197th column. We are about to reach 200 in that column. And it comes weekly. So it means 200 weeks of work. And in the next 3 weeks, we'll be on column 200. Started in 2002. In that column, we refer to the work that we have done as countries of the continent with the African Development Bank. And it's on setting power parities. It falls under the what is called International Comparison Program. The result of this says to us, the African spends 49% of their time to generate food. Yet the African is still vulnerable to poverty. They don't manage to get returns for what time they spend. In other countries, this is about 20%, 13%. But on the continent, it is 49%. So if the African spends 49%, just thinking about how what to eat, the African needs to eat, and doesn't eat to live. So how do we expect development? It's a very critical issue that has to be dealt with. But more importantly, or another important factor that comes out of this, beyond just saying that the African needs to eat, is that we have purchasing power parities, and we can talk about the $1 a day, or whatever currency a day it is, with a lot more confidence around what that means. A dollar a day, what does it mean a dollar a day, what does it mean to a South African relative to a person in Malawi and so on? This study resolves that. And we'll be engaging public comments to measure poverty here. And we'll finalize this pilot in November 2007. Producer Price Index, similar to the CPI, but it measures fresh factory gate prices. That is manufacturing and agriculture. Fresh produce, fresh factory gate prices. And we measure changes in producer price index over time. We will be running a large study of manufacturing in 2005, and we have extensive consultations with suppliers in the economy during 2006-2007. We'll have a reweighted CPI by February 2008. International relations. I've talked about this international relations, and Mr. Marileka hates that, and Dr. Mapapo sits at the back. I said I threw a coin in the air, and he's a doctor. Dr. Mapapo is the person who is dealing with this international relations from my office. But we have also our ambassador.
This is such an accurate time. Can you throw a coin?
I will do that. and very likely. And then we've got Professor Kambule, the renowned mathematician. He is with us today. Professor Kambule, I don't know whether you will be able to write for them too.
No, you don't have to.
I see. Professor Kambule says behind every black man there is a white man. It took him 22 years to turn white. We've got Mrs. Kwelane, a mathematician from Mpumalanga. She's a teacher by profession. She's 87 years old, older than Professor Kambule. They are both 87, but Mrs. Kwelane is much older. A few months older than, or 80 over there. Yes. And unfortunately, we used to have Mr. Jenaka. And Mr. Jenaka is now with us in spirit. 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, he got involved in a car accident. And he lost one of the octogenarians. It was a sad day for all of us when we lost him. But all these three people, what characterizes them is that they studied mathematics at the time when apartheid said, what is the use of teaching a Bantu child mathematics when they don't have any use for it? They fought the wars, and they are here, and they are still teaching. So when we talk about capacity building, we have these three octogenarian teachers to help us deal with this matter and deal with this legacy.
The committee welcomes the two senior citizens. It really is an honor to have you here, and the country is indebted to you, and from what I hear, and that you were able to rise above the oppressive system and be able to be what you are, and the knowledge you still impart, it really is invaluable. We really can't thank you enough for that, and it really is an honor to have you in our midst. And our condolences to the family of Mr. Jenaka, and we trust that his soul will rest in peace, and when he looks back, he will be able to count. He will be able to count how much he has actually contributed, because with our human eye, we won't be able to count the value of the contribution such people make. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. By the way, Mr. Jenaka, on the insistence of Professor Kambule, he said your suits look old-fashioned, Mr. Jenaka. You better go and get a good suit. And Mr. Jenaka, about a few weeks ago, bought this suit for this occasion. And unfortunately, he was not to wear that suit. But we saw the suit. He used to put on double-breasted, but now he had bought a suit that is more designed for occasions like this. Yes. Tarek, international relations. Here we are talking about the World Cup coming to South Africa of statistics. And it's important to talk about this in those terms, because two of us were in Germany in 2003, myself and Dr. Arrow. And we had to go to Germany in order that South Africa would get the World Cup. But first we had to get the World Cup of statistics, not the World Cup, in order that we get the World Cup of soccer. And I'll tell you, it is true that in order to get the World Cup, soccer World Cup, coming to South Africa, we needed to get the World Cup of statistics. You see, France hosted the World Cup. But before it did that, it had the World Cup of statistics. Korea hosted the World Cup in 2002. But before that, it had to host the World Cup of statistics in 2001. In 2003, when we went to Germany, it was because we were waiting for the World Cup of statistics. But for it to have the World Cup in 2006, it had to have the World Cup of statistics. It won the World Cup of statistics in 2003. That's why we were there. And in our plea, after Cabinet sent us to Germany, he said, for South Africa to have the Soccer World Cup, we need this World Cup of 36. We are going to have that one in 2009. That's why the World Cup, now Soccer World Cup, comes in 2010. We've got a program of SADC towards statistical capacity building and product modernization. And in this regard, we have Professor Carlton from Westat, renowned methodology Professor Carlton. He writes a book in 1962 with Moser, Moser and Carlton, on survey methods. He's been continuing this. And we have a program that is running in South Africa. And there we invite our SADC on this training program. We are embarking on an African statistical development in an even political environment. And this is under the auspices of what we call Africa Symposium for Statistical Development. And the first deliverable of this is the 2010 round of population and housing censuses. I am pleased to report that while in 2001 we are not certain about whether the continent will run a census, this time around we are certain that all countries on the continent are poised to run a census. Then there were no commitment. The number of countries were, this time around, Somalia says we want to run a census. And we should run a census. We'll need assistance to run a census. So in Sudan, in particular, we're focused on countries that are emerging out of conflict. If you look at the stage of the nation address by the president, he says, we'll have to go and stabilize Somalia. What we come in as statisticians is that we have to play a role and indicate the peacekeeping role of statistics, and in particular the census. If we remember in 1996, we said the census is a nation-building exercise. If the political elections and all these political processes were the bricks, the census will be the mortar that keeps this house together. And ever since then, the discussions around how we do things are centrally dealt with through the census. So, the Africa Symposium on Statistical Development was launched here in Cape Town last year by Minister Manuel. Early this year, we are in Rwanda, and as Ghana celebrates its 50th anniversary, we'll be in Ghana in November with the Africa Symposium for Statistical Development. The yields of this are, amongst others, the recapitulation of the statistics entity at the Economic Commission for Africa. The Minister of Finance invited Mr. Jane here when we hosted the ESSD and said to Mr. Jane, let's work on this because it's important. And we have worked on that. And yesterday and day before yesterday, interviews were held 2 days ago. Monday and Tuesday, interviews were held in Addis Ababa to fill this position of the head of statistics at the ECA. I was not one of the people being interviewed. I was still here in South Africa. Global Statistical Development and Learning in Competitive Climate.
Yes. Your two acronyms. The first one, AFSD, is the Africa Symposium.
Symposium for Statistical Development.
And the RPAC?
Is the Round of Population and Housing Census. 2010 round of population and housing census. Each decade is labeled RPHC. So this one is the 2010. Regarding the world, CSSA is chairing what is called Paris 21, which is Partnership in Statistical Development in the 21st Century, which is a world body. And we co-chair that on Friday. I was in Paris co-chairing this particular. And central to it is the development of national statistics development strategies and the implementation of the national statistical system. Next year, we'll be chairing the United Nations Statistics Commission, and the year after. We've got what is called ISI Bylaw Program. ISI is the International Statistical Institute. The bylaw there is ISIBAR, ISI bylaw. So the Zulu has always, the Guni has always known, they always been advancing this matter. So you've got ISI bylaw program here. Miranda, do you have any? What is happening now? Everybody's okay. But We've blended, we've got Isibalo, Isikumbiso, Isibani. It's all about ISR. Now, we are hosting this thing in 2009 in Durban. We are aiming for 10,000, and it is possible. From Asia, we believe we should bring 3,000. From the Americas, we should bring 3,000. From Europe, we should bring another 2,000. And from the continent, we should bring 2,000. And our honorable ambassadors here will be joining us in Portugal to go and say to the ISI in Portugal in August 2007, come to South Africa and see and help us stimulate numeracy. And we want the world here to help us do so. So our octogenarians will be there to call on the world to come to South Africa on this ISI in 2009. ISI is usually about 3,000 people. But last year when we were at the United Nations Statistics Commission, I said it will be bigger, the biggest and better. And we are committed to making it 10,000 from about 3,500. And we'll target the universities of the world to come here because statisticians are getting a little older and we are above the 50s. The average age is above the 50s now. Data management and information delivery. Here we are talking about the foundation for building quality statistics. Quality is at the center of trust in statistics. We need to have quality statistics to build trust. And there we are looking at common standards and definitions. We are talking about centralized storage of information and a single access point to information and management of the information, and creating the necessary infrastructure, both physical, conceptual, and skill, so that we can compare data across time. So this is very, very, very important to us. We have been working quietly using this DMIT as a tool, and increasingly we are generating, at the moment we've got the SASCAP, South Africa's quality, statistical quality definition. And we are using that within the organization, and in time we'll be putting it across to departments into the implementation of the National Statistics System. What about the future? The future, in order to understand the future, we have to understand the character of this organization. And in understanding the character of this organization, we come to five things that characterizes this organization. In no order of importance, this organization is highly intellectual. If it is not, it should be. But I've already mentioned that when I toss the coin, very likely that it will fall on a doctor, on a page. This organization is highly intellectual. It is in part in government, but it is in part a university because it produces scientific products. What do we require, therefore, to produce scientific products? We need an environment where the scientific products can be produced. We need a neighborliness in which these things should happen. And we need to run a program that ensures that we have people that produce these scientific products. It is a technological environment. Statistics by themselves are amenable to the environment of networks. So it is technological, driven largely by technology. Programming, distribution of information, collection of information, all these things require technology. It is heavily logistical. Very, 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 very logistical. Marshalling 100,000 people within a very short space of time. Recruiting, employing, deploying, decommissioning within a short space of time requires management of source on logistics. Heavily logistical. And the logistics are determined by the minister's statement that human lives have equal worth. And the sampling procedures in statistics are that each individual unit in the universe must have equal probability of election, because human life has equal wealth. That determines the logistics. It exists in a politically charged environment. We don't want to remember 2003 CPI, because when this thing came in there, of course, even if we didn't make a mistake in the CPI, when we released the data on labor employment, go and look at the newspapers what they said. The trade union said, these are no jobs. These are not decent jobs. Government said, why can you ignore 500,000 jobs? Can you not see the jobs? So this thing is cannon fodder for political contestation. So politically, this thing goes into a politically charged environment. And of course, to manage it, you need an administration that understands that these things come in equal doses. So when you look at this matrix and try to plot in there, strategically, what do you need to do under intellectual? What do you need to do under technology? What do you need to do under logistics, political, administrative? Most of government departments or any department is prominent in one of those. In statistics, they come with equal dominance, and you have to manage all those things at the same time. And therefore, because of this convergence between university and state and government and all that, this is the character of the animal. So looking forward, what then do we need to do? You see, we do three things. Given they are correct, we collect, we process, and we maintain reputation. And the intersection of all those processes are very, very important. And going forward, we'll be looking at this, and we'll be coming back to you to inform you about our new organizational structure. To look at these issues as I point them out to yourself today. Because of the nature, complexity, and what this organization does. And to maintain reputation. Because reputation now is what we need to maintain and that part. Now, beyond 2007, having understood the nature and character of this organization and what it does, what then do we need to do beyond 2007? And how should the structure of the organization be to deliver on this beyond 2007? We had a poverty challenge in 2008. These are the new things beyond the run-of-the-mill things that we do, which is every one and a half days we release a report. We had a poverty challenge in 2008. The tourism survey in 2008. Quarterly labor force survey results in August 2008. Three wages consumer price index in 2009. Statistical Training Institute in 2009. And these octogenarians that we have brought here are helping us in creating this institute. We got ISI, the World Cup of Statistics, in 2009. And let's not forget that it was the determinant of whether we got the World Cup, Soccer World Cup or not. That's the important thing that we have to remember. And we got Census 2011 in 20... Census... We got a census in 2011. There's nothing in 2010 because we went to go and watch soccer. We are running the, we'll be running the pilot and all these other things. But there'll be a lot of run of the mill things that we do. And then there's the new building in 2009. And now, here will you help me talk to this. Wait a point. Chair, I've spoken about the organization, its environment, and where it should be. The minister came in to our offices. His office, not yet. His office is close to ours. His office is very close to ours. and he walks across and he dies. And I thought, well, popcorn will do. But let's talk about the design. You see that the design showed a seashell. And this is entrenched in the African design. The design of this is and the building itself is conceived from our belief that statistics and counting in Africa has always been there. The design is based on the oak stone. And if you look at your leaflet there, the oak stone, the mat for that. The building has a drum right at the top. And this drum is what we are talking about. That yourself as policy makers, you have to beat that drum to send the message out. These arms here are expandable, and this is a new structure of 9 DDGs. You will see this, each one of these. At the moment, they are six. You will still have another 3 pointing out that it is expandable. DDG copper intensity, DDG quality and methodology, DDG this statistical support, DDG economic statistics, DDG population statistics. The entrance, there is the shell. There is the shell there. The entrance to this mighty building that informs South Africa. The design is round, it's African. The cut and feel remains typically and very strongly African. The roofing, transparent, because statistics is about transparency. That's the transparent roof there, around the statistics. This is the central administration block. The processing center is underground. We occupy lots of space for processing. The processing will be underground. This is how it will look at night. I hope ESCOM will allow us to use a bit of electricity to display this miracle at night. And as we will see, the institute for training is not yet there yet, but there is a lot of space for expansion for the institute for statistical training. Because we believe for the continent to move, we need that institute of statistical training. You can see the drum here, there, right at the top. This is the peak of the continent. And the training will be somewhere around here, to the north of that place. That's where the training center will be. So, Chair, we believe that for the continent, or rather for South Africa, to have and be proud of a credible statistics system, it has to have a building that promotes and shows that stage. And this building is near what we call Tessico, it's in Tessico Park. And Tessico Park is at the Innovation Hub. There's the Innovation Hub, there's the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research. There is a Department of Science and Technology nearby, Geological Service, and so on. And if we put this building there, there is the University of Pretoria. And if that the only area, the only thing that is missing there is the statistics office. And the statistics office should be part and parcel of that knowledge and information hub. That will complement the nature and form of Pretoria, as the mayor defined it, Mayor Mkhatso, that it will be a city that has, that prides itself with culture. And in relation to culture, we have the Freedom Park and the monument, Tuatreka Monument. That's culture. It will have knowledge and information in a tribe that is concerned. We have CSIR, the universities, and that's the character of the city. If you have seat of government, in relation to that, we have the union building. And in relation to this knowledge and information hub, that's where we have statistics in that node. This is what we are looking at. We are discussing the public works on this matter. We made a presentation on this, and we'll be taking this forward in order to look at the building. Chair, what have I said? I said that coming here was always nice, but also very, very difficult. Because issues from SCOTA blared into this portfolio committee, and issues from this portfolio committee blared into SCOTA. For 3 years, it was very difficult. From about 2005, I think, we have turned that corner. looking forward and looking over the last 3 years, I think this organization has delivered what needs to be delivered. The stage is set for it to move from strength to strength. What needs to be done now is to strategically launch it. And there are key issues that will make it be launched. One, we have to be aware that it is highly intellectual. If it is not, it should be. It is a highly technological environment. If it is not, it should be. It has to manage big logistics. If it doesn't, it should. It is immersed in a very politically dynamic environment. If it doesn't recognize that, it should. The administration must be able to manage in that kind of environment. If it doesn't, it should. Where it is located needs to be optimized, and it must be in that information node. I thank you.
Thank you, SG. It was very informative, but I can see the temptation to want to begin to do what we are going to do later in the year when we look at this annual report. But it's not a bad thing. Members, Mr. Mloto, Mr. Akia, Mr. Davidson, Mr. Bachi.
Thank you, sir. I just want to get a response from the SG on the expenditure on population and population census and statistics. Given that the activities of the community survey will be coming to an end in April 2007, and you've got an additional 56 million rand, so I just want to find out what will be the activities of the sub-program for this year, what will be they focusing on, given that most of the activities of the community survey are coming to an end. My second question, Chair, would be on the agricultural census for 2007. You're saying you are replacing a full census and you will be doing this postal survey with the assistance of the Department of Agriculture. My question would be, what would be the main objective of this census? And what have you realized? What were the shortcomings and weaknesses of the earlier one? My last question, Chair, is on the allocation for price statistics in the EMP. You are indicating that there will be a reduction. Yeah, there's a reduction. I'm sorry, Chair, I just misplaced. Yeah, there will be a decrease in the allocation for price statistics. And the reason given is that it's due to a reduction in activities for the income and expenditure survey. Now, I just want to be clarified on this matter and be given further details. Why do we see this reduction for this year? Mr. Afia?
Thanks, Chair. One, we'll start off by saying that to the statistician general and his team that your opening and closing remarks, one will accept them, but your just like comment, Chairperson, I want to emphasize on it that it's good now we're busy with the strategic plans for the budget vote. We are not dealing with the actuals. And therefore, it means that when in October, when we receive the annual reports and so on, and audited statements, maybe your comment will be then suitable for that, because we'll be looking into the issues which the Office of the Auditor General will raise and yourself, then we'll be able to discuss. But having said that, I think when we came here, there were a number of issues raised, and you're correct. I number where you nearly misled the committee and you got it right. I don't know how. I said to the chairperson after the meeting that you ran away with the matter. When you were saying that you have to go, the committee must leave you to go and talk to the Auditor General about issues raised. To me, it was not called for the meeting because you could have resolved those issues before you came to the committee. That is why you ran away with the matter. But this committee was very lenient on you. I think it went for the past 2 to 3 years with that lenience. Chairperson, I think what you are doing, and I must say that I'm happy that at least in my understanding of oversight, how should I do oversight, I'm happy because the department has now shown us the key performance indicators and the performance test. So then therefore it gives us a scope to be able to put the status quo, whether the heart is bleeding, is beating correctly or not. So, for instance, we know that the results of the community survey will be released by the third quarter of 2007-2008. Then in that quarter, I think this committee, after they've been released, the office, the department will come to us and be engaged on that. The other point which I want to raise as a matter of a question, Chairperson, as a politician, I'm not going to run away from this one. The employment and job creation. The nature of the job created, I'm not speaking in terms of the issue of being a job creation, the report thereof, as to what is the nature of the job created. You can see about 500,000. For argument's sake now, the boom in the industry, the construction industry, in job creation, and in it, you can't sustain it for long term. Then as a politician, we speak about the job creation and so on. We want to check in terms of our economy, what to have to be able to fill it out, what kind of jobs we have created, and to be clear to us. The last point, Chairperson, is the issue of you've got a pilot program of the poverty survey and so on. The issue of the definition of poverty. How, when are we going to be able to sit down and begin to have a clear definition of poverty? What do we mean? And I know it is an international challenge that about the poverty. In our view, how do you define poverty? In relation to all the things we raise of the Africans and so on, and so how do we define it? Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Davidson?
Yes. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, they say great minds think alike, fools never differ. I was guessing in much the same lines as Mr. Steer. Two things. Well, firstly, the easier one, in your survey, you talk about the whole question of the community survey and more specifically the service delivery component of that. Now, can you speak a little bit about that and what comprises that component? And then, following on Mr. Sear, you were quite rightly indicated when you spoke about the job survey and said we focused on the wrong thing. The 80,000 was not focused on in terms of manufacturing jobs created, which is as equal to the 80,000 early on. And But what struck me about that survey, when 500,000 jobs were created, and I can understand therefore why the debate took place. Look, sometimes there must be a logicalness about the figures that come out, a logicality. And when one sees 500,000 jobs come out, 167,000 of which are in the agricultural sector, a sector which actually contracted by a third during the same period and had a negative contribution towards economic or towards GDP growth. You say to yourself, there's a disconnect, and therefore the question must be raised. And then you go one step further and interrogate those figures, and you see most of those jobs, in fact, all of those jobs that are created, are 167,000, are subsistence farmers in the Eastern Cape. Now, then you say to yourself, well, what is the quality of that job that is created? What is a definition of a job? Is a lady sitting selling sweets at the side of the road a job? Now, how do you define a job? And I think once you get a consensus as to what constitutes a job, then I think your survey results become, I think, far more credible. I'm not saying credible in terms of the I'm not impugning your credibility whatsoever. I'm just saying in terms of the public mind's eye, they suddenly start saying, well, I mean, is this a credible job and related to what you perceive? So the second one also with regard to poverty. And I just, once again, the definition of what is poverty, and one very easily reduces it to a figure, as you said, a dollar a day. But doesn't poverty assume, or the definition assume, or make certain assumptions as to what, in fact, constitutes poverty? And there are a whole lot of factors in there. It's obviously a job. It's how much food you get a day. It's clothing. It's shelter. It's lifestyle. And are there not international criteria about what constitutes poverty in that context? And then you can put a figure to it in terms of your purchasing power parity formula. And if you just talk about that very briefly, I think that's my third question. I'll come back to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I found the input very exciting and stimulating. And I was just wondering whether you were going to say to us whether you're going to be also measuring the curve of the banana shots that Brazil and others would be taking to score goals, passing the wall and all that. But that's an interesting challenge. Maybe you need to tell us how it is done in the future so we can at least move beyond the quarterfinal stages. Bafana, Bafana. I think your input strongly suggested to us that you and your department are now forward-looking, very excited, and you've overcome your past, the challenges. And I think you can see the smile on everybody. You must be congratulations to you and well done. However, there's always a however. However, I feel that if we had probably a workshop, then perhaps you could have spent about 2 or 3 hours explaining to us the philosophy behind STEP and how it works. Right? But most of your input today went in that direction in terms of exactly who you are and where you want to go. I'm saying I would have loved to find that if you could have shared your time and telling us basically what your strict objectives are, and using your own terms, and in other words, measurable objectives, the key performance indicators, and not so much the outputs, but the outcomes. While you are responsible for the outcomes, the ministry is responsible for the outcomes. But we've got to know how you're going to achieve the move towards the outcomes annually. Now, so on the one hand, I welcome your input. It is giving us a better understanding of where we are coming and where we are going. But I still can't understand how we're going to be measuring annually. So when you're going to come to us at the end of the year, what are we actually going to be measuring? Your input should have said to us that last year we have achieved so
so far in terms of our outcomes, and this particular year we're going to move towards the following milestone. I'm saying that precisely because often we take these things for granted. Using your own understanding, you want to move and you want to make a qualitative leap. Therefore, it is important that you raise this issue. Right? It is a constructive criticism, and I would have loved to have seen it here. They've also, you know, helped me to understand and try to marry two things. One is the President's January 10th, State of the Nation, I'm thinking I'm in a political forum, but in the State of the Nation address, the Minister of Finance's address, and how you would interpret it. Because if you go to page 11, you know, in this book here, he said the economic program formed part of the concerted drive in which all South Africans should engage in order to reduce the levels of poverty and inequality in our society. The call firstly is for all South Africans. Right? It is not only government responsible for all South Africans. So we need to kind of understand what the President is saying there. So it is poverty and inequality in our society. So while my two colleagues are talking about poverty, I think in the South African context, more so than anywhere else, we're going to talk about inequality. So it's married, it's twinned. And therefore, not only, you know, last year...
Now it's marriage.
Yes. I think last year, when you presented your annual report, we were strongly recommending that you need to come up with the poverty definition, etc., because the theme running throughout since 1994 was in poverty alleviation. But linked to that, the answer also rests in defining what is inequality. Because that characterizes the South African that we know from pre-1994. And it's very, very crucial. So perhaps that is also something which South Africa need to look into in terms of where we are coming from. Because the playing field needs to be level. And therefore, we need to assess and evaluate what the minister is saying in terms of human life having equal worth. So using your own argument, I'm saying that therefore you cannot exclude inequality from it. Therefore, we need to marry the vision that the President is saying, what the Minister is saying, and how you would come to the party by saying, look, guys, these are the issues that our directors feel. And therefore, in terms of doing a lot of other things, we need to pose to Treasury too, and each other department that my colleague will have to do in the national government is to pose whether the priorities as outlined by the President is dealt with and questioned in terms of and to measure it in terms of the successive movement towards addressing poverty and inequality in the respective departments. We have clearly tried to draw that parallel, and I think for the first time one is seeing it in terms of exactly what your strategic objective is. Of course, we can learn from it and to see, you know, from a constructive perspective. So I'm saying that, please, when you're talking about the objective is measurement, I would love to have heard you how you're going to measure yourselves and how and what we need to do coming and you know, since we asking or measuring you by something which you have not outlined in terms of how you're going to achieve specific outputs and outcomes. So we need to be focused, and therein is the rub. Thank you.
In the absence of further questions, Aaron, did I leave you out?
No, it's a very general question, Chair. On the issue of economic statistics, we talk of two economies, and as you rightly said, that you want to inform government programs of how to pay fair, how to do in government programs. But on the issue of two economies, all the government programs that are there, are they helping to phase out these two economies, or are they perpetuating the two economies that we see in the country? And then on the issue of doing business in South Africa, there's this book by Hernando de Soto where the time it takes for a person to get business, get a business registered, it counts as far as economy is concerned. Now, do you look into that to say, when we do business in South Africa, or do you get that information to say, if we are moving towards, you know, the new millennium is the implementation of millennium goals and so forth. How much or how long does it take us to get legislation into place, and how long does it get a person to get this business registered and stuff like that? How does it impact on the economy? I wonder if you do such studies. And then on the rating of the PPI, what motivated you to think or rethink the rating of the PPI? Thank you.
Let's take response.
Mine really was to present, and the legal questions have been answered by my colleagues. Perhaps if I were to assist in directing how the responses may have to come, I will ask Dr. Kasim Rashad to get ready to intervene. I'm sure he has to look at and the Kipiwe, Ms. Masiting, has to get ready herself. And then I will also intervene, and any other member of our team here will also try and get the answers. If I may direct my colleagues, there is the question by MP Muloto on the what we will do with the additional 56 million Kipigo is now that we have finished the census. What is happening to the agricultural census, Rashad? The price statistics as well, the ENE says we are going to decrease the amount. Mr. Asia introduced the whole issue of the PPPs and how who measures poverty. Mr. Davis added to that question. And once more discussion on the labor force survey and what would the figures mean, and say that the dates that came because there are issues around the definition. Mr. Bamji, MP Bamji, Honorable Bamji, says how do we measure ourselves against what? MP Mguni wants to know whether there is progress in the second economy, and in particular, do we facilitate for growth, or rather, do we measure the speed of doing business in South Africa? What are the issues? I think Dr. Arrow, that particular one on the business register, you'll have to deal with. Let me go into a general answer to the issue that is raised by MP Asia and Honorable MP Davis. I think at the heart of what you are asking is the responsibility for measurement. That is the responsibility of the thing that the determination and definitions of what gets measured is what you are asking. And I think that we as statisticians actually say, you know, we are not really responsible for defining this thing. Just be defined somewhere, and then we come and measure it. And we'll measure it consistently across time. And we'll give the results of those definitions. But I think the important thing that you are raising is the challenge that the minister posed to us. Who determines, who defines what gets measured? Who determines what gets measured, and who defines it? And the issue that MP Bamji said, well, we should have engaged at least for about 3 hours. I think we need to engage that discourse. Because we need to say who determines and who defines. And then we come and measure. But that process of articulating that requires an engagement between ourselves and yourselves. And then the heart of it is the implementation of the national statistics system, so that the body and volume of data that we deal with falls within what the realm of what the nation has defined for itself. Whether it is the administrative records that the Department of Education collects or the Department of Labor collects, and those things have to. So I think that there is indeed a need to do that. But coming to the specifics of the labor force, that I think we are agreed that the 80,000 were something to track. But it was also important to say, hey, these jobs that come from the Eastern Cape, what are they and where are they? And what were the interventions by the Department of Agriculture in the Eastern Cape to yield suddenly this kind of phenomenon? I think policy should have actually directed itself and flashed there and say, what is the result? The definitions that we use are ILO definitions, and they say if we have worked for an hour in the past 7 days, that's a job. And we've been asking these questions consistently across time, and suddenly pop up this 167,000 jobs in an agricultural economy that was going down. But now the question is, what did the Ministry of Agriculture do in the Eastern Cape that could have possibly explained this situation? But I don't think a policy area prompted itself in that direction, and I don't know whether it was unfortunate or not. I would like to say unfortunate because statisticians don't have state plans, but one is really driving is that let's look, scrutinize the statistics, track them, and understand what is happening. And absolutely, absolutely. So that really is the issue there. MP, as all the poverty, I think Ms. Masike will take those, and I think I'll just conclude. But could you deal with the questions that relate to economic statistics, including the one on the EME? Otherwise, Atari or Celia would help with that on the EME. And then Kifido, you deal with those that address the occupation statistics. And Dr. Aru, Jairo, would you deal with the business register aspect?
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, let me go through a few things. As the DDG of Economic Statistics, I have a complementary relationship with my colleague, Ms. Masi Cheng, so I will say something about poverty, although by and large responsibility falls under social and population statistics. There are some critical issues that were raised and go to the heart of some fundamentals about the production of statistics, of which I will try to kind of respond to. On the question of the agricultural census, it's quite important to kind of emphasize two things. Number one is that what is quite striking about South Africa compared to many other developing countries is that the overwhelming importance of minerals has kind of, in some sense, underrated the importance of agriculture. We say that agriculture is kind of 3% of the GDP. It is an unusual country in many parts of the world. Agriculture is a much more important driver of growth and poverty than we tend to see in South Africa. And in some senses, agriculture, you could say, maybe doesn't receive the attention it should. But essentially, we have two products in agriculture. The one is a large sample survey which comes out annually, and then we have the census. Now, basically, in economic statistics, there are two aspects to collection. The one is the financial side, which we can do comfortably. We get a sense from financial data of what exactly is the cost and the revenue and the value added of firms. And the other side is the product. What are we actually producing? What is the nature of product we choose? What's the changing quality of the product? And I think that is the hardest part. In our challenges in economic statistics, if you were to ask about a strategy, the hardest part is actually having product knowledge, understanding what different products are. And in some sense, agricultural, the large sample survey, it's a sample survey, it takes a sample of firms and gets an estimate of what's happening in the economy. But the actual census goes into the details. It tries to cover every enterprise, and it tries to, in detail, kind of really understand what the enterprise is producing and so on. So it's a much more comprehensive, ambitious understanding. And a more comprehensive understanding of agriculture will give us the basis to make more informed policy analysis, of which a large sample survey is limited. On the issue of the budget around the income expenditure survey, essentially the biggest expenditure for the income expenditure survey takes place in the collection activities, and that's really been done. What we're currently busy with at the moment is really analysis and dissemination, and that the budgets are much more modest for that than it is for major collection. I think that the issue of purchasing power parity is also a very interesting one. As a trained economist, I struggle with the concept. So I think it's a bit unfair for us to kind of throw these concepts to people who don't work with it. As I said, as an economist, I struggle with it. But I think ultimately the purchasing power parity is so fundamental to what judgments we make about inequality in this country relative to other countries and so on. And measurements, for example, there's an important literature to say that the extent to which, for example, some economists would say you underestimate the level of inequality between developing and developed countries, because developing countries underestimate the informal sector, but the size of the economy is much bigger than we think. So inequality may not be as high as we make it out to be. So I'll just give you one example of how a lot of technical detail about measurement impact on the way we think about inequality or differences. But if I may just indulge and say, one of the easiest ways to kind of understand purchasing power parity is a simple thing. Let's assume that we live in a world where the rand, for one rand you get $1. And we say, this is the South African economy and this is the U.S. economy. Tomorrow, if the rand depreciates to 50 cents to a dollar, it doesn't automatically mean that South Africa is suddenly half poor. What it essentially means is that although the exchange rate has fluctuated, we know that the rental you pay still in rand terms is the same. The depreciation doesn't affect it immediately. The depreciation affects the import, but it doesn't affect the what we call the non-tradable. So what's important about the purchasing power parity concept? It could say that if you take an average U.S. dollar, a worker in Zimbabwe can do much more with 50 U.S. dollars than a worker in the U.S. In other words, the worker in Zimbabwe has more purchasing power parity because in local terms, the rental the workers pay on their monthly homes are much lower and so on. So it becomes a very important concept in really getting a true sense of what the cost of living is. Because, and the reason we introduced the purchasing power parity is because of fluctuation in exchange rate. You can't say a country is, at 100% or 50% poorer today because the exchange rate fluctuates. So it's a very important concept, and we in South Africa have a very elaborate system of estimating our purchasing power parity. We rely very much on our consumer price index collection infrastructure to do that. But naturally, if honorable members want to talk more about it, I'm willing to go into it. I think that the issue of poverty and inequality is a very interesting one. There's a general view in the world that what has happened in many countries is that poverty has gone down, but inequality has gone up. And this is a very interesting issue, because what it's saying is that if you have an economy where you have, say, one person who earns $50 a year or 50 rand a month and another person who earns 300 rand a month, and you have growth in the economy, and the poor person now earns 80 rand a month and the 300 rand a person now earns 1,000 rand a month, poverty has gone down, but inequality has gone up. And that is basically an interesting value judgment. One could say both are better off. One is more, benefited unequally from growth. But you may argue that actually that may not be a better welfare outcome. But just to say that the income and expenditure survey is one tool that will allow you to measure relative inequality. So we have in 95 and 2000, it's the base on which we measure relative inequality, while some of the poverty-related surveys allows you to measure poverty. So what I'm saying is that if there's one thing that characterizes South Africa, particularly in the post-apartheid era, is this massive investment in household surveys to really understand relative and absolute poverty in a way you couldn't understand before. So it's something that I think that the agency invests a lot and is able to kind of give. There are problems. There are always problems with measurement, but to the best of our abilities, we try to deal with them. Question of the two economies, I guess a similar issue comes up. We face two challenges. Just getting the formal sector right itself is a major challenge in the economy. Measuring formal sector activity, measuring the contribution of new sectors like security and business services is a major challenge. So at one level, our overwhelming challenge is measuring the formal sector. But I must admit that When it comes to measuring smaller firms, when it comes to measuring informal sector firms, that's where the challenges are overwhelming, and I think it is the area where in the next couple of years we'll have to invest massively, intellectually, resources-wise, to really get a handle on that sector. Current estimates are that economists estimate that the informal sector, for example, is about 6 to 7. They range. Some say 5% of GDP at one extreme, the other say 15% of GDP. But you know, it's a field. It's not a science. So I think it's an important challenge that the Honourable MP proposes, and it's something that in the next couple of years we will have to address in a serious way. We have had some elementary dialogue with countries like Brazil and other countries in the African continent who struggle with this kind of thing, but it is the biggest challenge. So not only do we have a formal sector challenge, but the informal sector is a major challenge. I may have left out some, but I could come back to it. Thank you very much.
Chair, just to add on the two economies, two studies that we read. The one in 2000 and the other in 2005, which gives some interesting characteristics of the what one could label the second economy. Concept, a study of employers and self-employed. The results of that study are important, I think, in one respect. The one respect in which they are important is in relation to the interventions by South Africa Incorporated in that economy, in particular around financing and support. The two studies show no movement from the one time to the next time. In fact, the Macronisa seem to be making better interventions in supporting those businesses. In fact, family resources seem to be making much, much more pronounced interventions. But all the other interventions that we do know of, that are spoken about, have not moved an inch. I don't think they make 3% of all financial input into that sector, both in 2000 and in 2005. So if the questions address that, the data there, and you have to look at it, it's 2000 and 2005. And we'll be running another one in the near future to see to what extent is financing, to what extent do the second economy people access finance from the range of catalogue of services that we know of. In respect of that, it's no more than 3%. 5% is from family resources, 5% in that, another 5% is from Macronisa, and then the one from all these other banks, about 2%, and nothing from what we know as a catalogue of services for those services, for those that for those 2 years.
My apologies. One important last question that I left out was why the re-weighting of the PPI. I'm very sorry about that. It's important just to bear in mind. So, in our kind of bouquet of price collections, we have the consumer price index, which is the most sensitive release that an agency can ever produce, because it is the basis on which legal contracts are made. It is the basis on which monetary policy is made. So it is the most critical release of which we have a history which we're very sensitive to. But the production price index is as important, but doesn't receive the attention and doesn't shift the financial market, doesn't move financial markets as much as the producer price index does. But the producer price index plays a critical role in two senses. One is that it seems to be a lead indicator of consumer price index. If firms at the factory gate are experiencing increase in their cost structures, one is likely to see this later on in the consumer price index. So in some senses, the producer price index, as we know, is really the producer price. It's the price that firms receive, pay at the cost at the factory gate price. Now, one of the dilemmas is, and it's related to the point I made earlier, is that we struggle with getting good information on products. Firms, when you go to firms, the accountant is very readily available to give you information on the financial sector. But when you actually want information on products, you've got to sit with a number of line managers and so on. And we were meant to reweight 5 years ago when we were unhappy about the quality of the large sample survey product quality. Since then, we put in lots of effort to make sure that the quality of this large sample survey improves. So basically, the reason we're reweighting is we want to make sure that the cost structure of firm, the product the firm used to produce, is a good reflection of what really happens in the economy, because we haven't done that for 10 years. So people have substituted different intermediate products and substituted different plastic for metal or metal for plastic. So essentially, is to give currency to really capture properly what the prices are of the goods that are used in production. And that's really why we're re-rating. We're confident that the quality of the 2005 last sample survey is much better, and that is why we are committing to a re-rate at PPI in February 2008.
Thanks, Chair. I will start with the question around poverty where my colleague started. I think what we need to look at is the question around how do we define poverty, and do we have a definition of poverty in this country? The major issue has been that ZSA can provide technical knowledge around the measurement, and for a defined working definition of poverty, ZSA should play a role in making sure that there is participatory efforts to make sure that there is a defined and a well-agreed definition of poverty that does not come from ZSA, but has gone through a very robust consultation process. In answering what are our levels of thinking in terms of defining poverty currently, I think what we can say is that our observation is that poverty is a multidimensional phenomenon. I cannot talk about it without the DDG or people in the economic sector talking about it. It does not sit in the social environment alone. And the issues range from your quality of life, access to services, level of deprivation, and all those are still contested in terms of what you mean by each one of them. You still also talk about the issues around expenditure patterns within the households, across the communities. You talk about the income, and I think my colleague has talked about the power presidency. And then there is an issue around the poverty line. There's an issue around the consumption patterns that look mainly also around the food consumption and the housing within the households. So if you look at all this, you get to understand that there is no one definition, but there is a need for an integrated model that defines in its multidimensional way what poverty can be understood as in South Africa. And a lot of work has been done by those people who have been able to look at the issues. What we have also realized when we went to the council last year and proposed the poverty survey, the statistical council said to us, are you only going to talk about poverty without talking about inequalities? And we came to a conclusion that the statistical council has to have what we call a statistical council committee on poverty and inequality, in such a way that when we deal with poverty issues, we are able to qualitatively map the understanding and the work that needs to be done in terms of understanding the inequalities. Yes, there would be some work of analysis that people would do to try and look at the Gini coefficient and say that is what would show us what are the inequalities. But that work goes beyond that. We need to understand the qualitative issues and the assumptions and the factors that are underlying some of the assumptions that we make. Same applies for the poverty line. It is for us to provide the methodology and the technical expertise for the measurement, but it is not for ZSA to define the poverty line. It is a political issue, and it will be defined through the stakeholder and the public comment and the public agreement toward what the poverty line is. The technical part that we're sitting with currently is for us to be able to say what are the underlying assumptions and how do we weight them and what sources do we use to come to an understanding. There are lessons in other countries. Some countries have run away from saying there is one poverty line. They have structured their lines in terms of what they call the thresholds. Then they don't talk about the poverty line. Therefore, at the moment, we are still trying to learn as much as we can to say what would be more practical for South Africa. If we want to look at the international standards of talking about understanding what are the issues around talking about the benchmarks around your MDGs of $1 per day, how does that apply to South Africa in the economy? Is that what we want to apply? If it means 322 rands per person, what does that mean for South Africa? And what are the underlying assumptions that we need to use? So there is that technical work that we need to provide to give the direction towards the issues of poverty work. At the different level, there is some work that is being done between the Department of Social Development, Statistics South Africa, and National Treasury, and I think the Presidency, to look at what are the interventions that South Africa can start to look at qualitatively to develop what they call an anti-poverty strategy. Therefore, some of these things one day need to come together to form what would be an integrated model for South Africa for it to be able to measure poverty. So that's as much as I can try and remember on poverty. The questions around the jobs, I think the SG talked about the way we derive the number of jobs. About it's based on the respondents where we ask them one question: have you worked for 1 hour in the past 7 days? And that culminates in any type of job that an individual would have done. And as we are currently re-engineering the quarterly labor force survey, we had a workshop with the SADC countries and the East African countries in December 2006. The major issues that came out were around the definitions. The major issues that came around were around how do we separate the non-market activities in measuring the labor market, and how necessary is it for us to understand the differences that are brought in terms of the aggregate employment figures in terms of the non-market and the market activities. So a lot of work is also going around to understand how we juggle around or how we strengthen the understanding and the definitions around the labor market. I think in terms of the quality of jobs, in the previous release, we have seen an increase, yes, in the agricultural sector, yes, which is the informal sector, yes, which is subsistence farming, and it sits there as less quality jobs. But we have seen that the major contributors into the labor market have been the trade and the financial sector, as the sectors in terms of that. We have also seen that the types of jobs that have increased, we've seen the managerial and the technical numbers of people are increasing, not to the number that would be expected, but we have seen that increase. So the quality of jobs, yes, is something that needs to be looked into, but we have seen some elements of improvement. The community survey, there was a question around what are the service delivery components. We besides the issues around the finances and the livelihoods in the households, we will be looking at the access to houses for the households. We'll be looking at access. We've got the whole list, so we will understand the dynamics within the access to housing as a shelter and as a house and the type of house, how many rooms and how it is built, is it a mud? And then we will also look at access to education, levels of education and literacy and so on. We'll also be looking at access to grants, understanding how many people have had access to grants. There is a routine system, but this would be additional information that we would use to understand the access to the social security for the country. We also have the issues around the basic services, your water, sanitation, electricity, and so on. and then we have issues around her. So that is what would be your basket for the services that we are looking into. Then I think my CFO will just have to add on this one. Besides the fact that CS as a project is coming to an end, there are issues around currently finalizing the processing, the analysis, and the production, and the release of the results will incur some costs between now and the end of this year. But besides that part, a lot of work currently is working towards the quarterly labor force survey, which is going to employ about 295 permanent field workers. That will add onto our budget. And a lot of that increase is starting to shift now from community survey to the labor force survey that we are launching in January. I hope I've answered all the questions. Thanks.
Yep. On the TDPs, because Kikilo also researched this. That reminds me that the competitiveness report by the NTI that has said that South Africa has moved from a particular position probably to about position 55. Doesn't quite answer the question that the Honorable MP Zambi asked. 50 to 55, yes. In that report, we've got a purchasing power parity for South Africa per capita of $11,000. That's the purchasing power parity dollars. The capita income for South Africa is estimated as $3,500 or $3,000. So moving from $3,000 to $11,000 per capita when we convert to purchasing power parities, it is a jump. Now the question is, how were the purchasing power parities worked out to come to about $11,000 from $3,500? How does that relate to the $1 a day that we talk about in the MDGs? So all these issues come into the statistics market, and I think throws a lot of confusion in that market of numbers, unless they are standardized. So there's the 11,000 on the PPPs, 3,500 on the nominal, and then how does that nominal, the PPP adjusted, compared to the $1 a day? And is the $1 a day prescribed by the MDGs adjusted for PPPs? So the idea of working on this international comparisons program and working on the PPPs is very, very important, because it gives us the power to purchase some goods and services. But whether this one on the NPI is purchasing power parity adjusted in terms of the methods that we have applied in our statistics office, I don't know. Thank you.
Okay, there was Dr. Aro, and did the CFO want to add anything with regards to...
I think my colleague or my senior DDG is very well aside with her budget, and she's answered you spot on, so I don't need to contribute.
In fear of contradiction. Dr.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, MP Ngole. The Constitution of Section 22 of the Constitution guarantees every citizen the right to choose a trade, occupation, or profession to be economically active. Government policy, legislation, or administrative action must enable this right. Business registration as the gateway to the economy can be used to assess government fulfillment of its Section 22 duties. And this relates to the question that you have asked. If we were to run the pigeon contest, we would say South Africa, some studies show that South Africa is number 29 out of 175 countries in the ease of doing business. But if we were to take the South African constitution, you would say it's number one in the world. So the practice of doing business corresponding to the dictate of the Constitution, there seems to be a wide divergence. If I were to say today how many businesses are registered or were registered at the end of the financial year 2005-2006, I'm afraid you would get a whole set of numbers coming from different departments. There would be one number from the Health and Revenue Service. There would be another one from the Department of Trade and Industry. There would be another one from the National Treasury, and a fourth one possibly from the Statistics South Africa. And I must confess, none of these two numbers would be the same. None of them would be the same. So in essence, we do not know how many businesses are there registered and active in the South African economy. In fact, the absence of that information does not give us an assessment about what the tax gap is, who is out there doing business, being protected by the law, but unable to pay their dues to Caesar where they are due. The same thing applies in education. If I say how many kids are registered there in our school system, probably the Department of Education will give you some number. But if you were to go down to the ground and add those numbers from schools upward, I'm afraid you would come to a different number. Same question if you ask it, how many South African citizens have an ID? It's the same. If I were to ask today, how many businesses are there operating as taxis that transport millions of South Africans from work, from home to work and back? No one would have that one. So our administrative systems are not providing the kind of information that we need for the oversight of Parliament to be able to say this is how our government has moved from 1994 to where we are, and these are the kind of trends. So coming back to you, it's a legitimate question. In fact, even within one department, they require so many registration processes that are unconnected. If I were to say, if I'm a payee client, also a VAT client, also an SDL client, or UIF client with revenue service, there's not a single kind of hook that would put me and bring me all these things together to see that one. If I were an official in the Department of Labor and I say I want to find out what the potential is if every single South African who is employed today were to become unemployed, what is the potential cost to the state? And I'm afraid nobody would know that one. So indeed, what you are raising is something that we have been trying to work over for the last 7 years to try and say, let's put systems in place. And what is in fact needed is a legislation that stipulates that registration is a necessity, must be a prerequisite for doing business, so that we can be able to, on the click of a mouse, be able to update our knowledge of what is happening in the economy. And coming back, it links quite nicely with what one of us, Mr. Davidson, has said about the quality of jobs. Because if they are registered, we will be able to say there are so many businesses in manufacturing, there are so many businesses in the financial services, and therefore the grossing up of employment to these businesses will tell us, depending on what we understand of the quality of employment, we'll be able to say so many jobs has been created by so many businesses in the manufacturing sector or in the services sector, and we would have a factual basis on which we can be able to determine whether actually the quality jobs that have been produced do mean and are plausible in terms of updated information. So then I think all of us as public servants, as oversight bodies, and as executive have a role, a joint role to do this one, because it's proving to be very, very difficult to kind of get these things. So, as I said, it's something that you would have to advise us how that we can approach this problem in order to be able to update the administrative systems that underlie the kind of critical information that is required to assess the work of government. Thank you.
Yes, I think there is a critical risk to the credibility stakes that we have built up to so far. This business registration process is the biggest risk to part of the quality of data that we produce. I'm not throwing the question back, but I'm only saying this is the biggest risk. And for purposes of oversight, it requires that it be attended. So I think the Minister of Finance in Parliament has actually said this thing has to be tackled, and I think we all have to put our heads together to tackle it. The technology is there. The resources are there. It's really not the conceptual thinking is really on the table. It's a matter of now getting to it and dealing with it.
Just a quick one, a follow-up to what G has just mentioned. I just want to find out whether the 4.1, the additional 4.1 million that you'll be receiving for improving the business frame, would that be sufficient to deal with all the challenges that you're talking about, or is it something different?
Perhaps before you respond, I see there are other questions. Would you like to take them? Sam, do you have your hand up? Mr. Banji, Mr. Davidson, Mr. Ngozi.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as I indicated earlier, that I think we need a lot of time to engage in this because it's all about definitions at the end of the day. And I think basically for the doctor there to talk about business, you know what I mean, and bring questions back to us in terms of definition as far as this is concerned, that you're blaming legislators for not coming up with, you know, I don't mean blaming in a negative sense, in a positive sense. But then, shouldn't you, the statisticians, realize that the concept as far as business persons or business is concerned is such a broad concept, and therefore you need to engage yourself to say, look, these are the possible definitions. If you talk of definition A, it will mean this category of business. Category B will be category A plus something else. Category C will be A plus B plus something else. So in that way, you'll be able to assess and evaluate where we are going. Something like what SARS is doing now in terms of sending everybody into becoming taxpayers. But they are categorizing things as everything. But simply to say very broadly, I can't accept this argument. I think it's the responsibility of decisions in a way to say these are the problems, let us apply our minds, and putting forward suggestions. Because if we have to come up with a piece of legislation, if you don't agree on definition, it will not take off. That's where we are in terms of understanding where we're coming from. To give you a good example, for example, my colleague talked about the housing, and he talked about is it a house or is it a shack? But to fully understand the meaning behind his question, we would understand what is the policy of housing. Because we're putting forward a core house. And what do we understand by a core house? Then if we are criticizing and looking forward, we're doing it from all of us talking, right? To use my chairperson's repetition of my words in terms of from the singing from the same home book on the same page. Right? Then we can say right now there is success in terms of the provision of co-housing, and what else do we need to do in terms of incremental housing, etc. So we've got to be familiar with the policy that we are talking about and the concept of housing, because you don't want adequate housing, and what do we mean by adequate housing? So I'm saying these are the issues which we need to discuss, but when you're giving direction, and then all of us are understanding, and we do not fall foul to certain criticisms that have got no meaning. Because immediately if you say housing, adequate housing, or a shack, we immediately conjuring up images that we are not producing anything constructive. But the housing policy is also entitled giving the person a legal title, which that person can now negotiate. But of course, you know, there's lots of homework to be done to empower people, etc., so it is not abused. Okay. And the third point I wish to make is in terms of as things go, we've also got to understand that in each
progressive move we make, there will have to be regulations. And success will also have to be determined on how flexible these regulations are. Are we moving towards becoming an over-regulated society in every aspect, is paperwork and a whole host of things? And perhaps you need to also unpack that to see now how it is impacting in terms of delivery here and delivery there and understanding. In terms of the school numbers we are talking about, yes, every school principal is requested to send annually a set of figures in terms of his school population. It is true that if you go to the ground, you may not find the same number. The question is why? Because there may be absenteeism. There may be that initially the school principal had exaggerated the figures, so in terms of grading of the school, he can go up there and get extra money, more money. So there are a wide range of issues. So we need to inculcate an issue of values in our society across the board. So nobody will be punished simply because you are 50 students learners short in terms of your grading, etc., etc. And even the absenteeism in terms of as far as educators are concerned. Some are ill, in other institutions it is exaggerated, and also there are ghost teachers and ghost learners. So there are various reasons as to why statistics won't tell you. But the point is, who do you deploy to go out there? And this is where the statistics are not going to tell you. So there has to be a common measurement, a common set of indicators, giving the negative variables we find ourselves generally confronted with. And let's eliminate those, and then say within this percentage, which you often do, the 5% or whatever it is we are saying, we are now relatively accurate, and we as staff can challenge anybody else. So somebody somewhere must take the lead and to say we are above reproach, given the way we are moving and the policy in your court. Because everybody else will undermine you, right? Because it doesn't suit them. But you are speaking on behalf of the government, if you are speaking on behalf of the state, and you're talking about your international credibility. So the ball is in your court to show the way forward. Thank you.
Who was the next one, Mr. Davidson?
On the agriculture, you know, you are not stopping the saving. You change to the postal saving. Where you pose a questionnaire to a sample the industry. On that, there has to be prejudicing, or rather, not prejudice, but put you at risk. Perhaps some people might respond, some may not respond, you know, filling paperwork, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or to get the proper, you know, rather good results. And like when you do the saving itself, you go there.
I think Dr. Kasim will deal with the issue of the postal service and the party tax. Dr. Aro, I think you'll come back again on the additional 4.1 million resource and this particular process. Of, I think what I will try and deal with is the issues that MP Bamji, Honorable Bamji, is raising, which I'm not sure why we are discussing this, but it appears that the moment is ripe for implementing the national statistics. So the issues that we are raising are around what are the standards that are defined by the country to achieve certain things across society, and by what means do we do that? So you are throwing the ball back into our court and say, go ahead and implement that. There in the act, and it says the statistician general must see to it. I think in the last 3-4 years or 6 years when it started in 1995, we are not in a position to do it. In the last 5 years, the first 3 years of that, we are unlikely to do it because we, although the act prescribed, our moral authority was so not so good, please. I think we are now showing signs of saying we can lead that. And I think we should start leading that.
But that might have to start with the meeting that we're talking about, that we think we need to meet, discuss these things, and outline the process. At the moment, we are discussing amongst ourselves and saying, well, what is a PFMA equivalent of implementing the Statistics Act? Whereby across society, across departments, across this, you have this statistics unit that actually are guided by fundamentals and ethics of measurement and pull the data together in order that you achieve what you are saying. You are correct in saying the ball is back in the statistician's court. The definitions, yes, we can go and discuss. But in terms of what needs to be done, we have to elicit and put on the table where we start, where we go, and how we measure it. I think we agree with you. And I think the sooner we actually convene this meeting where we engage on these issues of definitions and so on, it will help us to have a structured way going forward.
Chair.
Chair, I think to add on the meeting, other than meeting to understand first what we, the department is not, or to discuss about definitions and so on, I think the first point on the agenda should be when you get into the department, what did you find? What are the impediments? And it will be important for us all to be able to understand in that meeting that from where you are now and the road which is started, the roadmap.
You are sneaking, yeah. You are sneaking a follow-up question.
Yeah. I'm a politician.
I will not allow that engagement because a point has been raised and I would imagine that such a meeting should take place. But the planning for that meeting does not take place here and now. Yeah, I respond to the other question.
On the issue of postal surveys, I think it's a bit misleading. Although postal survey is the instrument, there are many cases where we actually take the form and go visit the people and for them to fill in. So one of the ideas about the postal survey is that in a sample, there may be an extremely small group or a reasonable group that may give you no problems. They may fill it in, but often it's a small group. So essentially that's the instrument, but often we sit at SSA and we visit respondents before the postal survey, there's a big publicity campaign. If they don't respond, we follow up with a telephone. If they still don't respond, we make site visits and so on. So there's lots that goes on behind the postal survey. Basically, the kind of protocol often in enterprise or enterprise surveys is that, in most cases, we'd use the mode of a postal survey, but by and large, when the response and the quality of the questionnaire is not good, we have to make visits and so on. So there's a lot that goes on behind the postal survey to guarantee quality.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of definitions, the National Small Business Act Amendment of 2003 says that, an example, a business in agriculture is a medium-sized business if it has between 50 and 100 employees. It's small if it has between 10 and 49. It's micro if it is 5 or less. And it can also be defined in terms of turnover. Medium would be 5 million, 3 million for small, etc. So in terms of definitions of businesses, we do have that kind of general guideline from the Act that I've just mentioned. And that can be used because in conjunction with the skills development, maybe businesses are required to give estimates at the beginning of the financial year to the revenue service. So if we use that one, we do have a sense of the nature of business, the significance in the industry, to be able to say these are the approximate number of employees in the following. So if there are any policy interventions to be made, to any particular, with respect to any particular industry, and their size in the economy, those ones can be informed by information that is current and that is collected. I think the major problem is the fragmentation of the business registration in the country. SARS does register for tax purposes, the Department of Trade and Industry for company registrations, closed corporations, as well as PTY Limited. The Master of the High Court registers trusts, some of which also are engaged in the production of goods and services. The Department of Labor does that one. And none of these entities, government agencies, have a system of connecting. If I have an identity of a business that is registered for UIF with the Department of Labor, I may not necessarily know what that identity is in the tax system. And that creates a lot of leakages and uncertainties about the uniqueness of the identity of those ones. I've been asked about the question about the four million rand that was given to us, whether it was sufficient. I hope that the honorable members of this committee will recall some presentation some weeks ago from a sister department, the Department of Trade and Industry, in which they presented their plans of to how to improve and overhaul the CIPRO system to the tune of 158 million rands. Now, if you were to say they are only responsible for part of the registration and maintenance of business entities in the country, you can probably extrapolate that one to what it would require for us to have a comprehensive system that would encompass all the other government agencies and organs that are involved in registration. So the money that was given to us was basically a thinking money. Go and think. Use the four million rands and think about proposals that you need in order to be able. But I think the extent of that one would be much higher if you were to use the figure from CIPRO as an indicator of the things to expect. Thanks.
I accept the point that you're making. So effectively, you are saying that there has to be a coordination of these various. Now, the question that I was getting to is, where is this coordination? Who assumes the responsibility for coordination? At least there could be a common proposition by which we are all working. So that is going to be a tremendous task. It's not going to be an easy task because, you know, we know that has been a major problem over the years. So it is collating that information from different resources and how they are applying their minds, and that's something which we'll have to engage in. So I take the point. Thank you.
May I, Mr. Chair? Yes, there is currently a core group that consists of senior officials from the South African Revenue Service, ZSA, in which we are represented through Ms. De Klerk and myself, and the Department of Trade and Industry. So there is that one, but I think we require better resources and better leadership in order to make it come to some concrete outputs. Thanks.
Yeah, and then with regards to the to the matter of the National Statistics System implementation. I think we need to part here with a clear recommendation that we look at time frames with regards to your reporting back to us and putting in place a time measured plan that this committee should look into, because it does seem that it is key to the realization of a number of objectives. To the implementation of the Act itself, as you correctly put it, and I would imagine that this committee should actually follow this up, and that you also respond to us in good time. Any further questions? In the the absence of further questions, let me take this opportunity to thank you for having come before us with your web program and having been honest and frank with what we can expect. And we are going to continue at the moment to measure you in terms of what is before us. But also look forward also to getting the feedback and updates on outstanding matters, more particularly this one on the implementation of the National Statistics System. And wish you well in your unenviable task with its complexities and all its difficulties. And we trust that with the team that you say you have built, which used to be a problem before the committee in the past, we trust that with that team, you are going to show us the results that we all expect. The country is looking up to this department to do precisely that. And when we engage again in later in the year after the taking of your annual report, we would love to actually get that information. And with regard to the meeting that we spoke about, I think with your department we should actually engage to come up with a practical date when it should take place to be able to look at that plan. With that, and also to the veterans at the back, once again, a very big thank you. And I trust that I speak on behalf of the committee. I don't have to consult the committee. I must say we thank you very much and wish you well. And we trust that your age could be doubled so that we could continue benefiting from the wealth of experience that we have and your dedication, because some people with the amount of experience that you have been very selfish because they've taken it to their retirement home and they are quite happy to stand there and say during our time this never used to happen. And you are not saying that, you are continuing to contribute even more than some of us are doing. We thank you very much. Thanks for bringing them. With that, this meeting has come to an end, and there is probably a scene outside. And what? We meet again on.